From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, this hour we welcome two candidates for one judgeship. Meredith Vaca and Derek Harnsberger are both assistant district attorneys. They likely know each other well. One of them will win the position of Monroe County Court Judge, and along with it, a 10-year term. They're both highlighting their experience and their judgment when it comes to a wide range of issues. This hour, it's a chance for you to get to know them better and to distinguish the candidates from one another. Let me welcome them now. Meredith Vaca, running as a Democrat for Monroe County Court Judge. Meredith, welcome. Thanks for joining the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Derek Harnsberger, running as a Republican, a candidate for Monroe County Court Judge. Derek, welcome. Thanks for making the time for the program.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show, Evan.
Let me ask both of you to start by telling the listeners a little bit about why you decided to run for this particular judgeship, and also a little bit about what this judgeship, the work entails, because they've been, I think our audience is pretty well plugged in, but we've been learning about a number of different judgeships and positions this week. I think it's valuable to outline the work that you would be doing here. I'll start with Meredith Vaca. Why did you want to run for this seat, and tell us about what this position does?
Sure. So Monroe County Court Judge covers jurisdiction within our county, and Monroe County Court Judges handle criminal cases involving felonies. So nonviolent felonies and felonies. County Court Judges see, burglary cases, felony DWI cases, all the way up through homicides. So a little about my background. I grew up here in Rochester, grew up in the town of Greece. I live in the city of Rochester, so I'm very committed to Monroe County. I've been an attorney now for almost 15 years, and I started out doing civil litigation in private practice. And in 2007, I went to the Monroe County District Attorney's Office. I've been an assistant district attorney here for 13 years, and I've handled really all kinds of cases in all areas of the law. And for more than a decade now, I've been handling felony trials in our county court, in our Supreme Court. And for the past decade, I've specialized in the prosecution of crimes against children. So I primarily handle cases involving child physical and sexual abuse cases. I also handle homicides involving child fatalities and domestic violence. And so I'm seeking this position, Evan, to really bring all of that, valuable and important experience to the bench to make, decisions about people's lives. I think for me, one of the most important things that I want to bring to the bench is my experience working with people in our community. I have had the opportunity, especially being in the Child Abuse Bureau, to listen and talk to people from all walks of life throughout Monroe County about their stories. People come and talk to me about, really the most difficult things that have happened to them. So I have a very thorough understanding of trauma. I talk to people about their struggles with mental illness and addiction and things like that. And so what I want to do is bring all of that knowledge, that breadth and depth of experience that I've had these past 13 years at the DA's office to make really, fair and thoughtful decisions about people's lives.
All right. Derek Harnsberger, tell us about yourself and why you decided to run for this position.
Thanks. Well, I started my career over at the Syracuse University College of Law, and while I was in my last year of law school there, I volunteered with the United States Attorney's Office. As a part of that process, I was working in the what's known as the Exile Program, which is a program that deals with prosecuting the worst of the worst when it comes to gun and drug traffickers. My supervisor there, I asked him, I said, I want to be a judge someday, and I want to be a career litigator. What's the best way to do it? And he said, you go out to the busiest and the best jurisdiction you can and go out and become a litigator. And I said, where do I go? And he said, Monroe County, without a doubt. I've been in Monroe County as a prosecutor and as a defender. I started my career at the public defender's office, where for years I represented thousands of people across the county. I handled primarily a large, sizable number of those were the underprivileged African-American and Hispanic population within the city. And then I've dealt in post-appellate work, so individuals who have gone into prison are trying to reenter society. I'm working with them to try and get back on their feet. But ever since I've served as a prosecutor here as a district attorney, up until my most recent post here in the Appeals Bureau, I was prosecuting gun, drug violence that we're seeing chiefly in the city. So I was trying to be on the front lines combating that violence. As far as why I'm running this year, I firmly believe that the Monroe County Court needs some change. This is something that we're seeing across the board in Monroe County is calls for change. And as you observed, Evan, the Monroe County Court is a 10-year term. Within a 10-year period, you can do a lot of good or a lot of bad. With my experience, I'm the only candidate in this race who has experience on the ground representing people as a defender as well as a prosecutor. And that balanced perspective gives me the ability to come and bring novel ideas into the court so we can take our courts to the next level and make sure that every person is treated fairly under the law and that the perception of our courts is that every person is treated fairly.
Well, and let's expand on that point. You said that there needs to be change at the county court level. What is your specific concern or your most consistent criticism you have?
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing is, and whether it's founded or not, the fact of the matter is there is calls that there is injustice in our criminal justice system, particularly when it comes to members of the minority populations, the Black and Hispanic populations in particular. And one of the biggest things that is underlying our criminal justice system is the public needs to be confident in feeling that justice is being administered fairly across the board. And right now, we're seeing it with the protests, we're seeing it with the comments of all the groups that are forming right now, is there is concern that there are things like systemic racism in our courthouse, in our court system, in our criminal justice system. So it is absolutely imperative and critical that we put justices in the court system who are going to make sure that if there are changes that are needed internally within the court, that they take proactive strides to make that happen. And in my opinion, the only way a person can truly express a understanding when it comes to things like systemic racism is if you go through it yourself, which openly I am not that person. I am a Caucasian male who had two parents who lived with me. I never had to worry whether or not the lights were going to go off or we were going to have food that night. But I have the experience that I can empathize and understand and appreciate what goes on through my years of working in the city for the African-American populations. And I bring the experience directly from that experience. So when I get into court, I can change our public system for the better.
Meredith Vaca, I'm curious to know your thoughts about that. Do you share your opponent in this race's concern about the current state of affairs in the county court level, and how do you see some of the same issues that he just discussed?
I agree that the perception of our criminal justice system is important to acknowledge and make sure that we promote that the idea of fairness, especially when it comes to how people look at it. And certainly right now there's some lack of confidence, I think, in that. Being an Asian American in this community, growing up in an Italian American family, I am adopted. I grew up in Greece. I certainly bring a different perspective, and I think it's important when addressing the public's perception of our criminal justice system, it's important to have those different perspectives on the bench. You know, right now there are 6 Monroe County Court judges. There are 5 white males as judges, and Judge Karen Bailey Turner, who was elected last year, is our only female judge, our only person of color on the bench. So certainly, I think it would be important for the public's perception of our criminal justice system to, make sure that we represent them, to make sure that we have a diverse bench and people that really care about our community. You know, I have shown through my career, my dedication to our community, to seeking justice for really some of the most vulnerable members of our community, children, victims of domestic violence. As I said earlier, I have worked with people throughout our community. So I understand those important issues like generational poverty and the cycle of trauma and all of those things, I would bring to the bench in an effort to help improve the perception that the public has regarding our courts.
Well, let me ask both of you to kind of follow up a little bit on the point that Derek was making. So I'll start with you there, Derek. When you talk about the kinds of bias or frankly, the kinds of discrimination that people in this community and people around this country have experienced, and you acknowledge as a white guy, you can't necessarily know exactly how that feels, but you can try through the work that you have, through the experience and learning and listening, to put yourself in a position to be the kind of judge who will have the appropriate level of empathy. I guess I want to ask you how you know that you've done enough work in that regard. And I don't mean this as sort of a litmus test or, you know, anything sort of cheap. I am genuinely curious. I think what you're saying rings true for a lot of people. But it's also hard to figure out, you know, I have the same situation here hosting a talk show as a white male as you're talking about. I mean, I cannot put myself in exactly the shoes of people who have suffered in various ways discrimination in this country. And I am sort of constantly asking myself, have I made the right phone calls? Have I talked to the right people? Have I listened? Do I have at least a decent level of empathy and understanding? What's your threshold for yourself, and especially if you become a judge, how do you feel comfortable that you're doing the right work in that regard?
Yeah, and like I said, this, in my perspective, an individual gets that kind of perspective when either you go through it or you have the experience. So for myself, and I know you had Julie Cianca on the other day, and I know she talked about this in great detail. For myself, I've represented thousands of individuals here in the city of Rochester who were individuals of color. The reality is that when my opponent's talking about the conversations she's had with her family about it, the fact of the matter is I am the one who has gone into the jail and had to have a conversation with a person who I believe, based on the evidence, is not guilty of a crime, yet he is in custody. He is the sole breadwinner of his home. The child that he has, the child's mother who is at home, who are in poverty, are on the phone with me on a regular basis. I'm trying to help get them through this troubled times because they don't have the income because the husband is now incarcerated, as I'm trying to help him out. The reality is that the empathy that you have has to come from direct, honest experience. And you have to be willing to dive in deep and get in there to truly understand it. And that's where, as a public defender at the trial level, I wanted to make sure I did that, and I was an advocate across the board for my clients, both inside the courtroom and outside. And I've also been an advocate for reentry because the cycles of issues with regards to race don't begin or end in a courtroom at trial. Individuals who are on parole, individuals who are trying to reenter society, who have stigmas of convictions, these are things that I have dealt with personally and lived through vicariously through these people. So I have a true personal understanding to be able to empathize with what these people have gone through. And if you haven't done it personally, you just don't know. So the only way you can do it is get out there and do it yourself.
Meredith, do you want to add to that?
Yes, I would. You know, Evan, to answer your question, you know, as a judge, I think we need to constantly be educating ourselves and learning and really recognizing the biases that we have. You know, if we want to achieve fair and equitable decisions, we have to, you know, make sure that our decisions are impartial, that we're not bringing our implicit biases. And so, you know, right now, I know there's so much attention to that. I think many, many people in Monroe County are starting that 21-day challenge through United Way to address our biases. And so we need to do that as judges, certainly. We also need to recognize the effects of racism that it has on our criminal justice system. There are, you know, different forms of racism. There's individual racism where, let's say, someone's bias or implicit bias or stereotypes influences their particular decisions that impact someone. And then, of course, there's, you know, the systemic racism and the institutional racism that impacts all of society. I think that it's amplified in our criminal justice system. You know, we see it in the disproportionate rates of Black men and women being, you know, incarcerated and convicted. And so as judges, to really, you know, adequately respond to that, we need to recognize all of that, recognize, you know, it's the deep-rooted history. You know, and I would just say this, it's incumbent upon everyone that works in the criminal justice system to address racism. And when you talk about the, school to prison pipeline, judges really are kind of at the end of the pipeline. So we need to make sure that as a community, we address, racism at every level, from the beginning and to the end.
Talking to Meredith Vaca and Derek Harnsberger, two candidates for one Monroe County Court judgeship on the ballot this year. Let me grab a phone call. Maggie in Rochester on the subject that the guests were just talking about. Go ahead, Maggie.
Yeah, I'm sorry if this has been addressed while I was asking my question, but one of the things that really struck me as your guests were talking was their conversation about sort of perceptions of the court and this perception of whether or not the court is able to sort of deliver substantive justice and whether people trust the courts. And I really get nervous with language like that, because when we view this as a perception problem, we ignore the data-driven reality that courts are bad at providing substantive justice, that they do engage in racist behavior and behavior that perpetuates racism, and that it's structural, as Meredith said. And I get nervous, too, when the idea is that if we just have judges with the right attitude simply in there, that these problems will disappear. And so my question for your guests would be, what action would they take beyond simply recognizing that this is a problem? What action would they take as judges to address these issues in the court? Because this isn't just a perception problem. This is a justice problem. People are perceiving the courts correctly. So if we want to change that, we have to change the courts. Thank you.
All right, Maggie, thank you. I'll start with Meredith Falk on that. I'll ask both of our guests to respond. So Meredith, what she's saying is this isn't just, well, people have this idea that the courts have an unequal justice based on who you are. She's saying it's not just that, oh, it's a perception problem, let's do a PR campaign. It's actually a problem in real life. Like there is real unequal justice. And she wants sort of an acknowledgement of that and an idea about what could be done. Do you agree with her on that point, Meredith Vaca?
Yes, absolutely. And yes, it's the problem is way more than perception. We talked about the importance of how the public perceives justice. But yes, the racism is one of the biggest obstacle to true justice in our community. There is no question about that. And, I think I talked about that in my prior answer. And to kind of expand on what Maggie asked about what would I do as a judge, I think in order to really respond to our biases that we have, besides just recognizing that all of us have them, is to take actions and not just implicit bias training. But for me, what I plan to do as a judge is to make sure that I am out involved in the community with working with people in all of our communities throughout our city, throughout our suburbs, and really listening to them and listening to their stories. I've had the opportunity, as I talked about before, to really work with people in our community that are facing racism every day. I know as a judge, my work will be different. I think as a judge, you're a little bit more isolated in that you can't have those kinds of conversations that I've been having for the past 13 years. And so what is incumbent upon our judges is to make sure that we are involved in our community in other ways, to be involved with people of color in our community, specifically our Black populations, our populations with lesser means, so that, those interactions will help combat any biases that we have.
Derek Harnsberger, go ahead.
Well, one thing that I would note, and I agree with Meredith wholeheartedly. I think she hit the nail right on the head as far as the big picture, so I won't beat a dead horse. But the one thing I think we need to keep in perspective is as much as I would love to say that if you elect me as judge, I'm going to be able to resolve all systemic racism and racism issues in our county court system, I can't do that, and I would never do that. The reality is judges can do one part of the process, but the court system is a very complicated wheel, and that we need to acknowledge that cases come before the court for a number of reasons that are unrelated to the judges. There are issues at the police level, at the investigation level, and the enforcement level. If there are systemic racial issues in that field, that is going to dovetail into the court system. If we have prosecutors who prosecute cases based on flimsy evidence or bad evidence, that they don't go forward on the right reasons or they have some sort of bias in some way, it's very limited options that a judge has. You can call them out, but the reality is that it's up to the jury to decide that, as we've seen in some cases in recent history where there's been some questions about racial influence. So the bottom line is, I think that this is not a simple solution. It is something that we as a community and as a society, we need to address on a multifaceted level, that in order to get the criminal justice system in line, and I don't just mean that in the terms of judges, but I mean that in the terms of the entire system as a whole, we need to make sure that we don't just address one small niche area. We go to the big picture. And as judge, having my experience on the ground level with defense attorneys, with indigent clients, with the individuals who have gone through the poverty, the inner city, I am very much aware, more than just the statistics that you see on ACT Rochester, of what it means to grow up in the city of Rochester as a minority. And I am going to take those issues that those individuals have to make sure that when they get into the criminal justice system, they get their just desserts, which doesn't mean go to prison, that it is prison is the only option. I want to rehabilitate. I want these people to get back into the community. I want these people to be productive, tax-paying citizens. I want our community to do better across the board. So I want to be able to make sure that we push as many people back into the public as we can, as safely as we can, to make sure that the criminal justice system works and we're not just throwing people in prison and perpetuating the cycle once they get out.
All right. Well, I want to turn to some other issues here, and I want to start with Meredith Vaca and ask you if you could, Meredith, elaborate on a point you were making earlier, because I think both of you as candidates for Monroe County Court Judge, you know, you've both been in the prosecutor's office. You've worked on a wide range of cases. And, you know, Meredith, you talked about what goes into working on cases that involve kids and the emotional toll that can take and the way that that could impact you personally. And just from the perspective of a journalist, I think there are times where I feel intensely that way, and there are times where you almost feel desensitized to, you know, sort of dealing and wading through some of the roughest moments of society. But I find it's important to try to keep as much empathy as possible while keeping sort of a professional approach. And my guess is that has to be true for judges. You want someone with empathy. You want someone who can connect with people, and you want to be able to draw on those experiences while still holding to the law as you see it. Tell me how you see those ideas meshing, holding to the law while bringing empathy and drawing on the experiences. And I wonder if there are any specific experiences that you can recall that help you with this.
Yes, absolutely. So judges need to have that balance, right, of compassion for other people, for every person that comes in their courtroom, as well as neutrality and partiality to make decisions on the law, you know, regardless of their personal opinion or their, you know, sympathy for someone. And so judges are constantly finding a balance with those things. And they are, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think that it's essential for judges to have both of those things. I certainly have dealt with that, doing child abuse cases now for, you know, more than a decade. As you can imagine, the kinds of cases I deal with involving child sexual abuse or serious physical injury to babies and children are emotionally challenging. They're very difficult and complicated cases as well to prosecute. And I have found a balance of having empathy and compassion for the children and the victims that I work with, but also getting the job done. And I think that, you know, having handled really some of the most, you know, heinous and horrific cases that come before our courts, you know, it's given me a certain strength of character, I think, to really handle those, because you need to handle them in a reasonable way and look at the evidence. And as a judge, it's obviously so important to make decisions based on the law and the evidence before you on each particular case. But yes, having compassion for people compassion for their stories and that things they have been through. You know, that's essential to be a good judge, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Derek, how do you see it?
It comes down to compartmentalization. There is a time for emotion and empathy, and there is a time for logic and reason. As a prosecutor, one of the dangers of the job is you cannot let your personal emotions dictate a prosecution. Sometimes there are cases, particularly in victim cases, where the victims are particularly vulnerable. In cases such as homicide cases that we work on, we routinely are interplaying and working with the victims of the deceased, and we're trying to work with them and make sure they get justice. But one of the hardest things that we as prosecutors have to do is make sure that we do not operate under impression at the expense of logic and reason. When we do that, we end up prosecuting cases that may not need to be prosecuted or should not be prosecuted because the evidence simply doesn't support it, but we're letting our emotions override that. And the same thing goes for judges. We need to make sure that judges compartmentalize and apply emotion at the appropriate time and also make sure that they apply logic at the right time. And this is something that every judge inherently has. Every time you see a high-profile case on the news, the judges is the one who are going to have to take that case. They have to compartmentalize their personal emotions in the interest of justice to make sure that justice is fairly administered. And then there's going to come a point in the proceedings, particularly when it comes to sentencing, where things like empathy, things like consideration for the victims, what's needed to make them whole, that's the time that that comes into play. But it's got to be the right pick and choose of when that comes in, and that can only come from experience.
All right, let me grab another phone call. This is Robert in Fairport. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for my call. Hey, how do voters know what's really behind a candidate as far as what is their work ethic? Are they going to show up to work every day? And how well do you really know this person? I mean, I'm kind of fascinated that one thing that has not come up during this cycle for judges is the whole Letitia Astacio fiasco, where we had somebody that didn't show up for work for almost a year. And you're talking about 10-year terms. I think the Supreme Court terms are 15 years. How do you really know? I mean, the thing is, I'd like to know more about these candidates if they've established a track record where they at least show up to work every day, because we didn't get that last time around.
Okay, but help me understand. Do you think, number one, Robert, there's a lot of judges that just aren't showing up for work, and do you think if you ask them, they'll just tell you they're not?
I think that, number one, the terms are too long. I think the term should be shortened. I think a 5-year term is long enough. Because the thing is that if you have a judge that just turns the thing into a complete joke, which we had with Letitia Astacio, there's almost no way to get rid of that judge. And, you know, the public doesn't know enough about what the performance is for these judges. We don't know, you know, we don't know if somebody has an issue with attendance, basically, which is something that happened with in her case. I just think that the voters are in a very poor position, and I think it'd be interesting to find out from the candidates how voters could have avoided a situation like the Astacio situation.
All right. I mean, are we just going to talk about Letitia Astacio for the next 30 years in this community? I don't mean to be rude here, but she's not on the ballot, man. She's not, I don't think Meredith Vaca and Derek Harnsberger have anything but a very strong track record of showing up to work. They're running against each other. They're endorsed by different parties, but their colleagues like and respect them. I don't know what else to tell you about that. I mean, I don't want to waste a whole lot more time giving you airtime to bash Letitia Stasto, who's not running in this race. But separate to that, let's entertain one point that Robert's making here. Meredith, are the terms, is a 10-year term too long here? Is there a danger to getting this wrong, and is there a good way for voters to be able to kind of work through this? Because, you know, as Gary Craig wrote in his story yesterday on the race between Vaca and Harnsberger, Gary Craig was saying that, you know, voters are asking all the time, why am I voting for judges? Why are judges on party lines? And so I think that at least part and parcel with some of what Robert's saying. So let's address Robert's point on are the terms too long? How do you know if you're voting for someone with strong values and a work ethic? How would you advise people to sort of evaluate records? I'll start with Meredith.
Sure. So I don't think that terms are too long. County court judge terms are 10 years. State Supreme Court judges are 14 years. And I think the reason that it's important for them to be longer than other offices where they are 2 years or 4 years is that judges are apolitical. We must be apolitical, even though, you know, we become judges running, you know, endorsed by a political party. And so I think having longer terms allows that judge to really, you know, fulfill their obligation of being apolitical. I think that's why the terms are longer, and I think it's good to have them that way. I do recognize the concern by many voters that it's difficult to really know, you know, what our judges stand for, you know, number one, because we are so constrained because of judicial campaign ethics guidelines that we can't talk about our personal stance on certain legal issues. We can't, of course, you know, say how we would decide or rule on a particular case. We can't prejudge a case. So we're really, you know, stuck with talking to voters about our qualifications. I do think there's a lot of things we can talk about that are informative to voters. I think it would be helpful, you know, if a voter knows, let's say, a criminal defense attorney or another prosecutor or someone involved in the criminal justice system locally, you can ask them, hey, how is this person? This person's running and this person's running. What do you think about them? I think that might be particularly helpful for voters. And I know a lot of people tell me that. They say, I don't really understand what this particular judge does, but I have this neighbor and he's a lawyer and I asked him about you. And so I think that's a good idea for voters that, you know, are really more lay people to the law.
All right, Derek Harnsberger, go ahead.
I totally agree with you. It is extremely difficult for voters to really get a good idea who they're voting for. There is a lot of rules in play that muzzle us to a lot of the topics that we want to talk about. And the reality is, particularly this year in 2020, social gatherings are not something that we can do under normal circumstances. We could have large-scale events. We could have public halls and town forums, but we simply can't have that this year. So this year in particular is very tough. So the way that I would advise it is to ask around, ask lawyers, ask colleagues, do your homework, go online, look at the high-profile cases we've done, look at the types of cases we've done. Some of our work is public. Take a look at that. And ultimately ask questions. You know, don't be afraid to throw out questions. Go on my Facebook page, Derek for Judge. Throw out a question. I'm going to answer it because I want you to be educated, because I think one of the most dangerous things that we can do as a society and with voters out there is just assume that just because you see a Democrat next to a name or a Republican on a name or any other party on the name, you assume that that's what you're going to get, when the reality is what a person's politics are may not necessarily reflect their judicial philosophy. So the only way you can do it is by doing your homework and asking the questions. And otherwise, replace the people in Albany and change the rules.
Well, let me mention the websites for listeners to learn more. Derek Harnsberger is DerekForJudge.com, D-E-R-E-K, DerekForJudge.com. Meredith Vaca is ElectVaca.com, V-A-C-C-A. Those are the websites. If you want to learn more yourself, and after our only break of the hour, we'll come back and talk more with the candidates for Monroe County Court Judge. Two candidates, one position on the ballot this year. More with them next. Coming up in our second hour, we're answering questions about breast health with the experts when it comes to who should be screened at what age. What are the circumstances that change when you start thinking about screening for breast cancer? What about breast density, genetics, and more? And what about clinical trials that are going on? There's more than you might be aware of. There's a chance to get into some. We'll talk about all of that and answer your questions next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Meredith Vaca and Derek Harnsberger are guests, both of them working in the prosecutor's office, but, you know, slightly different careers. There's some similarities. It's interesting when you look at the career paths and where they are now versus where they have been. Meredith Vaca mentioned she's been in that office 13 years, but also has a father and an uncle who have worked in as defense lawyers. Whereas Derek Harnsberger has worked as a public defender. So I want to talk to both of you about how you see sort of the spectrum of your work and maybe your experience and how that could impact the work you might do as a judge, seeing all sides of it. Let me start with Derek Harnsberger on this. Take me through some of your experience and how you think it might impact your work as a judge.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, as a public defender, I know that Julie Sianca went into this. We don't get to pick and choose our cases as public defenders. When I started out as a public defender fresh out of law school, I had 650 cases thrown on my desk. I was representing thousands of people every year in that capacity, the vast majority of which were individuals from the inner city. But I've dealt with every walk of life, every age, race, gender, orientation, religion. So it's personal experience and that we are voting for judges based on themselves, not based on what family they come from. So the reality is for me, I look at it in the sense that I have the personal experience where I've dealt with these issues. I've gone into the city. I've worked with the families of the accused and saw the fallout of what happens in a criminal prosecution and even what happens in a conviction. So bringing that experience forward and applying that as a judge provides me with the true ability to be fair and impartial. Because I think if you have not seen the criminal justice system from both sides, the scale of justice is always going to be tilted one way or the other, and we can't improve the system if it's always leaning. And I know as much as judges try, there's some great prosecutors who went on to become judges, and there's great defenders who have become great judges. But it's the sort of thing that for voters out there, you have to look at our experience and say, which of the two of us do you believe is most qualified and best to take us to the next level?
Meredith Vaca.
Yes. So, you know, my experience as an assistant district attorney, I think really is important and is helpful in my, hopefully, my future job as a Monroe County Court judge. And let me just explain kind of what I do and how that translates. So, you know, sometimes there's this public perception that prosecutors' job is to convict. And I can tell you that's not my job. You know, my job that I've been doing for the past 13 years is to seek justice and to do what is right. You know, and whether that is offering a reduced sentence, you know, maybe deciding that I am not going to prosecute this case for a variety of reasons. Those are all kinds of decisions I make on a daily basis. I listen to multiple voices, you know, whether it's the defense attorney telling me about the person accused and their life story and kind of what things they've gone through. I listen to victims and, you know, their families and what they've gone through. I listen to medical experts to tell me about, you know, maybe some serious physical injury sustained by a child. I talk to police officers. I talk to counselors that often work with victims and the trauma they've been through. So I listen to all these voices and perspectives, and I balance them, and I try to make fair decisions about, you know, what kind of sentence to offer and other things like that. So I think that kind of experience is very important. And something I will bring to the bench. You also mentioned earlier my father and my uncle, and you're right. They are both defense attorneys in this area. My father is Paul Vaca. My uncle is Jim Vaca. And my dad has been a defense attorney for probably 40 years, I think. So that's what I grew up with. You know, I grew up with, you know, his stories of how he zealously advocated and represented his clients. And, you know, what I bring is that a balance and a deep respect for both sides, for a respect for the prosecution and a respect for the defense and, you know, a respect for the criminal justice system in general. It is not perfect by any means, but I have seen in my, you know, past 13 years working in the courts, I've seen it do good things for people. I've seen it help people, defendants and victims and their families and the community. And so, you know, I think I bring important personal life experiences, my work experiences that will, you know, help me make fair and equitable decisions.
Well, a couple of questions from Andrew and Alex, two listeners, and they're pretty similar. Andrew says, I still don't understand why they're on party lines at all. Should I assume a Democrat will be a different kind of judge than a Republican? Alex writes to say, ask your guests if they'd rather have run as independents, as school board candidates do. Well, two separate questions, but let's hit them sort of one at a time. Andrew's question, still don't understand why they're on party lines at all. Should I assume a Democrat will be a different kind of judge than a Republican? Meredith Vaca, should Andrew assume a Democrat would be a different kind of judge than a Republican?
You know, no, I don't think there should be those assumptions. I think that it's important to look at the candidate themselves and the experiences they bring. You know, because once the person steps into the courtroom and puts on that robe, like I said earlier, they're apolitical. And so, you know, what you might expect, I think, doesn't always play out in the courtroom. I've had that question a lot. Why do people have to run under political party if they're supposed to be apolitical? It doesn't make sense. I mean, that's the process that we have. You know, I can tell you that I have the endorsement of five political parties going into this race. I am a Democrat. I have the Democratic line. I also won the Working Families Party line, the Independence line, the Libertarian line, and the Stand Party line. In the June primary. And, you know, people ask me about those political parties because obviously they're all different. They all have different platforms. And what I tell people is that, you know, those parties have put their confidence in me and their endorsement in me, that I can be a fair judge, that I can, you know, really make these impartial, apolitical decisions. This is the process that we have. I had someone recommend, hey, why don't you run like the school board candidates do and not have a political party? And that's an idea. But, you know, this is what we have to do. And even though we do run under political party, it's so important that we take those politics out, on the bench.
Would you rather run as independents, Meredith?
Would I rather run as
if you could
without,
if you,
a political party?
Yeah, I mean, if you could wave a wand and say we're going to do this the way school boards do, it's going to be independent, no party listed. Would you rather do it that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would make sense. I think that would make sense. You know, and not to put down the process now, because I do think it's a good process. But yes, I think it also makes sense to not have political parties, given the kind of jobs that we have.
Sure. Derek Harnsberger, go ahead. Well, you might
voting.
Be... voting. There you go, Derek. Start again. Go ahead, sir.
Sorry about that. First thing I'd warn voters about when trying to evaluate the party system is when you go to vote, do not confuse independence with independent. You'll see on the ballot, you're going to see independence. That is actually a party. That does not mean it's an unaffiliated endorsement of some kind. That is an actual political party. So when we're talking about independent, we're talking about as an unaffiliated party and a true blank. The one thing that you do get from a party affiliation is a general baseline in their judicial philosophy. While you may not get a full and complete picture of who they are, it does give you an idea who is more likely to be an activist from the bench in terms of their their judicial philosophies, as opposed to a more conservative approach of applying the law as it's written. But to turn the point about the political party system, Meredith has just flaunted she's on five lines. That was based on a primary where less than 10% of the party voted. So when you're looking at this on the ballot, you're saying that you're endorsed by a party, but yet only a sizably small fraction has actually endorsed it. So is that really representative of what that party believes? And it's really not easy to tell. So the bottom line is, as we've seen in the news, we've seen the Free the People rock in the city. We've seen the Faith Leaders Caucus doing this, where they're saying you can't rely on Democrats' lines to think that you're going to get a Democrat. You can't rely on Republicans to think you're going to get a Republican. The only way you're going to be able to get an honest vote is to do your homework, go out, and then judge us based on our character and what we see. And if you don't see something and you want to know, ask the question.
Would you rather have done this without affiliation at all, like school board candidates do, Derek?
I would love to be able to do that, and I would also love to be able to have more ability to talk about issues, policies, topics of the law. There's a lot of rules that we can amend, but the bottom line is this is our system. It is what it is, and we have to live with it. And even if you run as a unaffiliated individual, there's nothing stopping a political party from saying, we, the Republican Party, endorse Derek. We, the Democrat Party, endorse Meredith. The City Black Caucus endorses one candidate. I mean, you can't stop an endorsement, which basically conveys the exact same information.
Let me wrap by asking you both about some comments that were made in the piece that Gary Craig wrote for the Democrat and Chronicle this week. And, Derek, you said that the courts need to be proactive in tackling issues, especially when it comes to some of the issues you've already talked about this hour, issues related to race and bias. And you reminded readers and listeners, county court judges are there for 10 years. You said, quote, you can do a lot of good or a lot of bad, end quote. Both of you have talked a lot this hour about the kind of change you want to bring to the bench and the values that you hold, the experiences you have. Derek, when you worry that a lot of bad could be done, what does that look like and what's your concern there?
Well, I hate to bring up a sensitive topic we were trying to avoid earlier, but Letitia Astacio, for example, that saga, the Matt Rosenbaum issues that we saw. It's the sort of thing that if we put the wrong person in there, it impacts our ability to fairly administer justice. So that's why it's important that we get the right people in there who are going to push us forward. So that's why if I'm elected as judge, the first thing that I want to do is implement community-involved intervention inside resolutions. I think our criminal justice system relies too much on probation and parole. I think we need to get community groups involved and have them be proactive. During my campaign, I've gotten to meet a lot of groups that really want to step up and help reform our society. Rising Up Recovery, Gates to Recovery, Purpose Driven. There's a lot of groups out there that really want to get involved, but they don't have an avenue to do it. And I want to get in there and implement those. So even if I can't get funding, I'm going to work with the community groups to try and help us better our system so that we can take it to the next level, so that over the next 10 years, I'm the one that's doing all the things to help us do good, so that I'm not the next person who we look at who draws the ire of our community when it comes to the criminal justice system.
Meredith Vaca.
Yes. So just as much as judges can do good things for our community, judges can at the same time do not good things, bad things for our community. And I think that really reflects the kind of influence judges have on people's lives and why it's so important for us to inform ourselves on our candidates and vote for our judicial races. And so, you know, the kinds of bad things that judges can do, you know, really would be injustices, you know, whether that is, you know, not following the law. And when I say that, you know, law, our criminal law is very nuanced, and you have to take each case as it comes before you. And there are certainly times where judges unintentionally maybe are mistaken on the law. But judges that really just ignore the law, that is an injustice. Or judges that, you know, don't apply the law fairly to people that come before them, you know, that's an injustice. And unfortunately, what that can do is that can lead to, you know, potentially serious consequences for the people that are involved in the criminal justice system, you know, whether that is someone being incarcerated wrongfully or whether that is, you know, a victim who does not get any form of justice and, you know, other things as well. So I think it's important for our, you know, for our voters, again, to make sure that we elect good judges and, you know, there's got to be accountability as well.
I want to mention the websites if you want to learn more about these two candidates, Meredith Vaca is at electvaca.com, V-A-C-C-A, electvaca.com. Derek Harnsberger is at derekforjudge.com, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, derekforjudge.com. More about them, their qualifications, and the issues. And I want to thank both of them. I think that they do a great service to listeners, to voters in this community, when they come on at length with one another, and I am grateful for the time. Meredith Vaca, candidate for Monroe County Court Judge, thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you for having us.
Derek Harnsberger, candidate for Monroe County Court Judge. Derek, thank you very much.
Thank you, Evan. And keep up the good work.
You got it. All right. Thanks to both of them and listeners. If you want to access candidates' interviews before you vote, and a lot of you I know are voting now, or you might start voting early this weekend, it's probably what I'm going to do. But if you want to access those interviews, we've got them archived for you, as always, with all the conversations of Connections, wxxinews.org/connections. And we've got much more coming up.